Welcome to the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, leading the business conversation right here on SFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. It was John Templeton who once said that the four most dangerous words in investing are, "This time it's different." I'm Jimmy Meha. This is the SFM Market Update. Let's get you up to date. Coming up on the show today, we take a look at the latest results out of Telkom. We reflect on the year that was financially for them with the chief financial officer of that business. We also speak to the team at Discovery Green on their landmark agreement with the University of Cape Town to have the university be one of the first higher education institutes to be 90% renewable from the start or from the third quarter of 2027. We're going to get a sense of what that project will look like and what that partnership would mean for both Discovery and the University of Cape Town. Then we have a conversation with the National Lotteries Commission on the change of lottery service provider. We know that Ituba's contract expired at the end of May. We know that Sizakaya is now the new lotteries operator effective 1 June. We're going to speak to the National Lotteries Commission about all of those changes and what they mean for South Africans. Then we also have a conversation with the team at the Land Bank, taking a look at the farming side of things and how farming insurance is becoming more imperative when we are thinking about weather changes and the impact that those changes are having on the farmers themselves.
The Day's Markets, understanding the moves and making smarter investment calls.
We kick off the show, as we always do, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by F&B Wealth and Investments' Chantal Marks to take a look at this and see what we make of the day's movements. Chantal, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. A better Tuesday than it was Monday when I look at the equity movements on the day's trade, but I think arguably the big moves were focused around the rand, gaining strength against all of the major currencies. Clearly, the sentiment being boosted by S&P's view that South Africa does indeed sit in a positive space. We might not be upgraded out of junk status just yet, but the rand loving the positive sentiment from the ratings agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that this is just a continuation of what has been a few months of maybe even a year of positive support for the rand itself. So you'll remember last year, we also had an upgrade coming through. We've had an upgrade to the outlook now from S&P. Moody's seemingly quite positive still. The reform agenda, even though it is being executed quite slowly, it is being executed. The grey list removal, all of that continues to underpin support for the rand, on top of the fact that we've got a lower inflation target, and the Reserve Bank seems they're committed to that lower inflation target. So I think that the ratings agencies and the rand is trying to look through this near-term blip that we are facing and hoping that it doesn't have longer-term effects.
Now, the rand is below key levels at the moment on some of the currencies, Chantal, below 22 rand against the British pound, below 19 against the euro, and the Australian dollar has been above 11 rand for quite some time. But I'm more interested in the US dollar, 16 rand 24 at the moment. We know we have seen sub 16 rand. Is it too soon to be optimistic that we'll see it again before the end of the year?
So perhaps not before the end of the year. But, well, I mean, anything can happen in markets like these. I would just caution that we are living in very volatile times, and there is a lot of uncertainty around, particularly from a geopolitical perspective. And then the added risk of a bigger risk-off drive that could be triggered by what we are seeing in US equity markets at the moment. So I think that maybe if things kind of stay the way they are, if everyone continues to believe in AI, because you believe it a lot, all of this stuff impacts the rand because it impacts risk sentiment, we could absolutely go to below 16.
Chantal, speaking of those tensions around the world, I want to take a look at how they've been influencing some of the market movements. I suppose the glaring one and the obvious conversation is still centered around the oil conversation. We're around 94, just shy of $95 a barrel. We closed out the month having touched $90 a barrel. Yesterday we were as high as 97, 98, almost $100 a barrel. Very, very volatile times, as you mentioned. And I suppose a lot of that hinging on the deal that we're expecting to come through imminently. Markets also, I suppose, starting to wonder what imminently actually means. I mean, we've been hearing of this deal for quite some time now.
Yeah, this is exceptionally complex because I think that both the US and Iran feel very firm in what they want from a specific deal. And then you add in the fact that they aren't the only parties to this deal. And what we've seen over the last 24 hours is that the US and Iran are saying one thing, and then Israel is doing something completely different. So it makes it very, very difficult to actually get all the parties on board and to commit to something a little bit more longer term. I think we'd be remiss to think that this is going to be solved very quickly. The best we can hope for right now is that we get some sort of a memorandum of understanding over the next week or two that delays or kind of extends that ceasefire with about 60 days. But as I mentioned, it's complex. The sticky points are extremely sticky. And that, I think, is why the oil price is still quite high. Look, it's come down, as you've mentioned, but considering that we started the year with an oil price of about $60 a barrel, it's still substantially elevated and pricing in quite a bit of risk. Because if everything was to go back to normal, you could assume that we'd get oil prices at pretty low levels again. Right now, it's just a question of when that normal happens, and it seems further and further away.
Chantal, let's take a look at domestic matters. Industrial stocks up 3.1% on the day's trade. Now, yesterday, there was quite a lot of red. In fact, not a single sector was in the green. Today, it's nice to see a bit of a recovery, a bit of a bounce back. Clearly, not much gains, but nice to see it cancelling out the negative moves. Markets, I suppose, doing their usual adjustments at the start of the month, potential repositioning of portfolios, potential. I mean, we are officially almost wrapping up the first half of the year at this point. And so this is expected from markets or from asset managers and investment managers that there might be some volatility as portfolios are adjusted.
Yeah, I do think that things like that do have an impact. But I think if you go into the detail of today's biggest movers, Naspers and Prosus being by far the two largest industrial companies in South Africa, really doing the bulk of the heavy lifting there. So Naspers, as big as it is, was up 10.3% today. And Prosus, as huge as it is, was up over 8% today. And all of that had nothing to do with the JSE or local market dynamics and had everything to do with Tencent saying the word AI and coupling that with agent and then mentioning a testing of an AI agent in WeChat. And Tencent's share price went absolutely ballistic, and we know that Tencent makes up a big part of Naspers and Prosus's valuation, and therefore we saw this big reaction there. But I must say, I mean, generally, if you look even at the small cap space, if you look at the broader industrial space and mid caps, it was positive, suggesting that investors are perhaps seeing value in that specific space of the market. I mean, I think that it's been very underappreciated and certainly under a lot of pressure since the Middle East war began.
Chantal, how do we distinguish between the value in the market and just the AI trade? Because as you alluded to, the mention of AI alone was enough to send sentiment in a particular direction. And it's not the first time we've seen that happen. Tencent is not the first to mention this. We've seen other companies as well saying we're potentially exploring AI agents. We're potentially exploring dipping further into AI. I know Meta as well has come out to say they're potentially looking at a subscription model to offset against the AI revenues they're not generating. And that could mean something completely different. But how do we as investors then start to discern between an AI trade and something that might be a legitimate fundamental move in a company?
Yeah, look, it's absolutely chaotic out there. I mean, I'll just give an example of what's happening right now in the US. We've got a business called Marvell Technologies up 28% because the CEO of Nvidia said that he thinks it's going to be a $1 trillion company. It's absolute hopes and dreams at this point. So when you are looking at something that is AI exposed, it is so important not to go on vibes alone. You need to actually make sure that this business has an addressable market, that it knows how it's going to service that market, and that it is in a good financial position. A lot of these companies that just add AI at the end, it echoes .com, pets.com, diapers.com. So it's very important not to fall for that. And then additionally, even if you do identify really good businesses exposed to the AI theme, let's think about a company like Samsung. It's a fantastic company, but if you had Samsung over the last year, it is now a massive part of your portfolio. So the right thing to do is to say, listen, this is a bit chunky in my portfolio. It's exposed to a theme that looks very overtraded right now. Let me just take some money off the table. You don't have to sell everything, but just make sure that all your eggs are not in one basket. Fundamental investment principles still apply.
Chantal, alongside those fundamental investment principles, let's just re-emphasize the principle of not getting into every single trade. I see the Bitcoin price is down. We're below $70,000 a coin, some might say, or the Bitcoin bulls might say, this is a good time to reload up or to buy more. And this is just one example. But generally speaking, from a market's perspective, sometimes, especially in times like this, it's okay to just sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it seems too good to be true, it usually is. So I'd say that about the Bitcoin trade. I'm going to say that about the AI trade, probably a little bit too early right now. But yeah, I think when things are looking frothy and you can't make sense of those moves, it makes sense to take a step back. You don't want to be, you don't necessarily want to step out of the market fully, but just be quite careful in terms of not being overexposed to one specific asset class. And perhaps now is also a good time to look at your winners, take some money off the table and put it aside for when you actually see opportunities emerge again, or look for opportunities in places that have been absolutely underappreciated. They still exist. It seems like the market is just going up and up and up and up, but market breadth isn't great, which means that there are lots of stocks being left behind currently.
Don't invest for vibes, and where you can, listen to the champion of underappreciated stocks, the head of research at FNB Wealth and Investments, Chantal Marks. Always a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for the time. Chantal joining us to take a look at market movements and try and make sense of what is out there in the market.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The team at Discovery Green have announced a landmark partnership with one of the leading universities in South Africa and on the African continent, the University of Cape Town. They are looking to move the University of Cape Town's energy requirements into renewable energy. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with Executive Director and Head Actuary at Discovery Green, Dan Ginsberg. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of these developments. Dan, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us more about this partnership and this landmark agreement.
Good day, Jimmy. Thanks so much for having me on. Yes, absolutely. So a lot of people will know Discovery for, you know, perhaps your health insurer, perhaps your bank. What we're a bit less well known for, but we're looking to make a hot blaze onto the field, is for being a renewable energy provider. So what Discovery Green is we're looking to solve a fundamental problem. It's almost a retail problem within South Africa for business, in that it's very hard for a business to be able to access renewable energy at scale, kind of the way that you would want to do it, going to a grocery store, where you can select exactly how much renewable energy you want at an affordable price, at a way that the price never changes for as long as you want, and crucially, that it's de-risked. So what we're basically doing right now is we are the first and only provider in South Africa that is able to, in one fell swoop, replace your coal-powered electricity with renewable energy. And that's exactly what we've done here with the University of Cape Town. So starting from Q3 of next year, 90% of their energy will be supplied through us, you know, through a mechanism that's called wheeling. Basically, what this wheeling mechanism does is it allows us to build utility-scale renewable energy projects in South Africa. So these are solar plants, wind plants. They'll be amongst the largest plants ever built to date in the country. They will then power electrons into the national grid, and the University of Cape Town nominally will be buying those electrons. What's very crucial here is the vast majority will be done right off the bat. And because it's 90%, they're able to almost completely greenify themselves. They're able to completely hedge their prices, because as long as they're with us, we guarantee that the price does not go up in real terms at all. In other words, it only goes up by inflation. And it protects them from any future price shocks, you know, whether it's the Eskom price, which is what most entities will be currently using, keeps going up at the CPI plus 5 or 6%. If there's a big change in the constituents between what the daytime prices or the nighttime prices, that doesn't matter. It's completely guaranteed by us, and we take the risk. It's essentially like being able to come to a retailer of sorts, where you can buy the electricity you want when you want it, make sure it's clean, and it's ultimately backed by a JSE top 40 firm in Discovery Limited. So Discovery Limited is, you know, putting up the guarantees and the financial wherewithal to help to build these massive renewable energy plants, and crucially take on the generation risk of how much the plants are producing. What I mean by generation risk essentially is a solar plant will only produce as long as the sun is shining. Similarly, a wind plant will only produce as long as the wind is blowing. And this produces risk in either direction. So if the sun is not shining, you can't rely on getting supply from a solar plant, and you're therefore relying on getting dirty and potentially expensive energy from the grid otherwise. Likewise, if, let's say, a drought happens and the solar plant is producing more than what you expect, you might actually be able to not be able to consume the energy that the plant is giving you. So that becomes wasted and it becomes expensive. It's exactly the same thing for a wind plant, which can be highly volatile. What we basically do is we're building a whole pool of plants that will be amongst the largest in the country and a portfolio stationed all across South Africa, and using the power of geographical diversification. And then crucially, there's a bit of special sauce here. We're using our actuaries that we use at, you know, amongst the subsidiaries of the company, to actually make sure that we can package this risk and allow it to be fit for retail consumption, so that a client is getting a very high guaranteed minimum amount of renewable energy from Discovery and never pays for what they can't consume. So that's what basically makes it more akin to a retail than a wholesale solution that presents all of these risks. We're very proud that it's coming to the University of Cape Town. It's the first tertiary institution that's on our portfolio. We've already had some very large clients that have signed up from other industries. You know, we have Sasol from petrochemicals. We've had Glencore sign up from mining. We've got hotel groups. We've got retailers. But we're very proud, of course, for UCT to be the first institute of higher learning that's come onto our portfolio.
Dan, you alluded to the fact that this isn't the first deal of this nature that Discovery Green has done. And I think back to the Impala deal that was announced towards the start of last year, alongside some of the other partnership agreements, the likes of those with Baldwin Properties and the Capital Hotels that have been signed. What has Discovery Green learned from the wheeling deals and structuring these wheeling deals that might be able to benefit companies as they look to transition into more renewable solutions?
Yes, thanks, Jimmy. So I think one of the most important things we've learned is to try and de-risk as much as possible for the client, to be as client-centric as possible in terms of trying to protect from future deviations. Obviously, electricity is a hot topic in South Africa. We're all aware of the perils of having electricity shortages. We're also all aware of these price increases which are coming through. So what we've learned is to try and figure out precisely, you know, using from an actuarial method, what is going to be the biggest net savings to the client over the long term. And what we've actually found that clients seem to prefer is they want to go for as high a level of coverage as possible, which is why with this product with UCT, we're offering 90% coverage. The advantage of that is obviously the more you go with a more affordable or cheaper price upfront, the greater your upfront savings. But this becomes more and more important over time because there is so much uncertainty as to how where the electricity price is going to go or by how much it's going to increase. What we've also learned, and this is crucial, the relationship between the electricity price which you can pay for renewable energy and the coverage you get actually isn't always equal. And if I were to kind of break this down, we all know about solar energy. Solar energy is being installed across, you know, rooftops in South Africa. It's intuitive. It's also actually quite cheap to install. The fundamental problem with solar is that it can only really provide you maybe with 20, 30, 40% of your needs. Obviously, during night, it's not operating at all. And during the day, sometimes you get some cloud cover. So you kind of get stuck there once you go with solar, because in order to then cover your nighttime energy, you've got to do one of two things which aren't really that feasible. You either go to a wind provider, or you ask to get, you know, nighttime energy from the wind that's being produced. And a wind provider will just say no because they need to sell their daytime energy too, so you can't be selective that way. Or you'd have to go and install batteries, which is a very hot topic. Now, batteries might be fine to charge and discharge for an hour or two, but if you want to have enough batteries to get you through the night, it actually becomes more expensive than had you not even gone into your renewables in the first place. So we've actually found that in terms of a long-term savings perspective from a client's net present value, it makes the most sense to go for 90% coverage and to de-risk from as much as possible any price movements that happen within the market. And by price movements, I don't just mean what we've been used to in most of the previous years, because typically what happens is you'll get, we've just gone through an 8.5% price increase from Eskom. That's happened more or less uniformly. What we actually are foreseeing that's going to be happening in the future is that some prices are going to be going up higher than others, and that's going to be happening more at night, precisely because of the solar issue. It's the laws of economics are taking shape, and basically how that's manifesting is as more solar is being put onto the grid, we're seeing that there's a potential for oversupply during the daytime. I know it sounds funny seeing as we had, you know, some load shedding not too long ago, but the problem with that is that if there's too much solar that's coming onto the grid, it means that a price signal needs to be sent to actually potentially drop the daytime price. Likewise, during the night, there's no power to ultimately replace it. And as the coal stations get older and they start powering down, there's a gap that's going to start to open between supply and demand nationally. Now, what's very likely to happen is there's going to be a flip where daytime prices are going to become relatively cheap, nighttime prices are going to become very expensive, and you don't want to be caught out, so to speak, with having just procured, you know, solar and thinking I've done well, I've covered 30 or 40%, when in reality, that price in the future may go down and you haven't covered yourself for nighttime energy. So the best way to kind of cover for all these dynamics, because the cookie can crumble in a multitude of ways, is to kind of hedge it at 90%. And that way you don't have to necessarily worry about how much the electricity price is going to go up in the future over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, nor how the prices are going to manifest by different times of day. This is one of the most important things to consider.
And this is certainly some of the considerations that the University of Cape Town would have gone through in leading up to this agreement. Clearly, they are looking to get off the grid and off the reliance of Eskom in future. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Executive Director and Head Actuary at Discovery Green, Dan Ginsberg, for joining us to take us through Discovery Green's latest landmark agreement with the University of Cape Town to take the university almost completely off grid starting from the third quarter of 2027.
Sure, it's great knowing my net worth's denominated in dollars, euros, pounds, and rands. But that's not why I'm a client of Standard Bank Private. This is surprising my bro in the States on his birthday.
Surprise! It's not what you do that matters, but who you do it for. Get an offshore account with 4 currency options and pay no monthly maintenance fees. Search Standard Bank Private for more. Standard Bank, it can be. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The fourth national lottery and sports pools operator of South Africa was announced last year in about May or so, and that was announced, of course, as Sizekaya, that they would be taking over from Ituba as our official national lottery operator effective 1 June. Now, the 1st of June has come, and as of yesterday, the new national lottery operator has assumed control on an 8-year agreement of our lottery operations in the country. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the National Lotteries Commission, and I'm speaking to the acting commissioner at the National Lotteries Commission, Advocate Lesedi Boirang, about this, and trying to make sense of it. Lesedi, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Can we perhaps start with the overview of where we are today with the contract? We know the previous conversations around the contract, it was awarded by the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, Minister Park Stau, but there was some controversy around that. Have we put that all behind us, given that the new operator has officially assumed control?
Thank you for having us, Jimmy, this evening. It's a pleasure to be invited. Yes, we confirm as the NLC being the regulator and being a statutory body established with legislative mandate to regulate and oversee the conduct of the national lotteries, to confirm that the new fourth license operator is on board, known as Sizekaya, and they have started effectively on the 1st of June 2026 for the coming 8 years in terms of the tenure of their contract. Whatever has been said relating to the controversies you are relating to, most of them, those controversies, the merits and demerits thereof, most of the issues are sub judice, and I'm going to steer away and would be unable to not to comment on any aspect of the case while judicial proceedings are ongoing. Thank you.
Of course, and that's why I brought that up, was because there is a judicial process at the moment. There is a case from the previous operator, the outgoing operator in Ituba, that was laid before the courts as well. And of course, while those cases are ongoing, we don't know the outcomes, and therefore we will not address those. Advocate Boirang, I want to take a look at the new status and what this means. Take us through the transition from a Lotteries Commission perspective. There are things that happen with old operators, new operators. I know I've gone through and walked into one of the retail outlets, and in some retail outlets you're seeing two lotteries machines, one from the old operator, one from the new operator. Just take us through how the transition is being managed from a statutory level and from a regulatory level where you sit.
Yeah, from the regulator, including statutory point of view, the NLC, together with the new operator and other relevant stakeholders, have undertaken extensive planning and transition management processes to facilitate a smooth and orderly transition between license periods of Ituba and the new one, which is Sizekaya, with the overarching objective still remaining that there should be uninterrupted continuation of the lottery operations and the preservation of a seamless experience for players, for retailers, beneficiaries, and the broader public. And therefore, confirmation is that in many retailers, Sizekaya has already commenced their operations. In many of the bank applications, they are operating, and they will still be rolling out some of the machines in various parts of the country as their footprint is national. Thank you.
Advocate Boirang, there were some conversations around what happens as part of this transition, and perhaps you can clarify this from your perspective as the National Lotteries Commission. There were some talks that the previous jackpots related to Ituba would then be rolled back into the NLC and not be the responsibility of Sizekaya. Can you just take us through how that is managed from a legal standpoint, if you can give us some insight?
Thank you for that question. Jimmy, in respect of that, it must be made clear to the listeners that the operator has outlined the following transitional arrangements for participants. All those that have played up until Saturday, being the 30th, if I'm not mistaken, of May, all valid winning tickets will remain payable under the existing national lottery rules. That's the first point. The second point is that prices within the 365-day claim period will still be honored, with claims to be processed under the new operator from the 1st of June, where applicable. And any or all the unclaimed jackpots accumulated before the transition will be transferred to the National Lotteries Commission, as it is part of the rules and the agreement. And players are advised to retain their tickets and proof of purchase for any claims. So any player that had played over the weekend and have won either Powerball or Powerball Plus draws and have won and have not claimed as yet, those are the transitional rules that will be applying. It's not that they have lost out.
Advocate Boyang, can we take a look at some other areas within the National Lotteries Commission? The understanding is, of course, that the National Lotteries Commission administers and enforces the Lotteries Act, and part of that would then mean that we are looking at things like sports pools operators and seeing how they would be potentially impacted. Now, we specifically have seen a transition from one national lottery operator to another, but if we can just expand the conversation a little bit to take a look at the increase that we've seen in online gambling markets and online lotteries, they've become more prevalent in South Africa. From a National Lotteries Commission perspective, how are you seeing that market, and how is that potentially interfering with something like the contract that's been awarded to Sizakaya here?
It must be also made known to the public that it is a mandatory requirement and mandate of the organization, being the National Lottery, that we regulate the lottery, we regulate the sports pools, but also we do not regulate gambling or online gambling, as you have just said. There's a distinction between the two. And all the schemes that are there, lottery schemes, and the lottery schemes, if they need to be made lawful, they should obtain necessary approvals from the National Lotteries Commission. And those that are illegally operated, being lottery schemes, the organization being the NLC has got the right to enforce the law, as it falls under the general offenses of the Lotteries Act in terms of Section 57. And therefore, they would be deemed to be interfering with the lawful lottery that has been granted. In South Africa, we only have one lottery operator, and others would be lottery schemes, and others would be sports pools. But all of them are regulated by the NLC. And any gambling, be it online, it's within the remit and purview of the National Gambling Board.
Thank you very much to Advocate Lesedi Boyehang, Acting Commissioner of the National Lotteries Commission, for taking us through the awarding of the fourth national lottery operator in South Africa in Sizakaya, and taking us through how that transition will affect South African consumers.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
With $650 billion projected to be spent on AI-related infrastructure projects in 2026 alone, are global markets witnessing the early stages of a tech revolution, or is it investor exuberance at its best? Tune into the SAFM Market Update tomorrow evening at 6:45 as Nshalati Hlongwane, a manager in the institutional clients team at Allan Gray, joins me to discuss what long-term investors can learn from past tech disruption eras and explains why valuations still matter in the age of AI. Brought to you by Allan Gray, more than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized FSP.
Did you know that South Africa has one of the highest crypto adoption rates in the world? Fact. With that comes massive innovation and new opportunities. Stablecoins are the new buzzword in the industry. These are crypto versions of the Rand, the Euro, and the US dollar. But what's coming is even more exciting. Being able to borrow against your crypto and buying tokenized real-world assets such as stocks, wine, football teams, and real estate. Join me, Kieran Ryan, on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast each week to stay on top of what's happening in the fascinating world of crypto.
The Property Pod, hosted by me, Suren Naidu, is South Africa's premier property investor podcast. On this weekly MoneyWeb show, we gain insider insights from leading executives, analysts, developers, and entrepreneurs in the country's dynamic real estate sector. The podcast features diverse guests and offers in-depth coverage on the South African property scene, also featuring as a video on MoneyWeb TV on YouTube. Listen to the Property Pod weekly on moneyweb.co.za, podcast platforms like Iono, Spotify, and Apple Podcast for the latest industry insights and developments.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Telkom SA SOC Limited released their full year's numbers for the financial year ended 31 March 2026. The partially owned, state-owned entity saw a healthy profit of just over 3.5 billion rand. This in stark contrast to the almost 10 billion rand loss that the business was running back in 2023. We're going to be taking a look at the business and its turnaround with the Chief Financial Officer at Telkom, Nonkululeko Dlamini. Joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance. Nonkululeko, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Another good year for the Telkom business, another strong year as part of a turnaround strategy that has clearly been paying off over the last couple of years. The last time you and I caught up at the end of last financial year, the numbers were looking positive, the business had momentum, and that momentum continued into this year.
Indeed, and good evening, Jimmy, to your listeners as well. The strategy that we adopted, and indeed it was 3 years ago when we decided to go the route of a one Telkom approach and to basically strengthen our position of our data strength. And we call it a data-led strategy where our mobile services as well as the utilization of fiber has shown growth and in great strength in the financial year that we've just closed. And you can see that our data-led revenue growing significantly at over 9%. And that indicates that the strategy is indeed delivering as we would have wanted to see it delivering.
Nonkululeko, let's take a look at the profit from a business perspective. Profits coming down by more than 50%. Ordinarily, that would worry investors, that would worry shareholders, that would worry everybody. But we did obviously come off of a very high base with the SwiftNet deal being part of last year's financials and not this year's. Take us through the rest of the performance outside of those sort of one-off transactions.
Yes, so last year we did deliver the sale of SwiftNet, and it was a critical, again, element of our strategy because we took a decision to exit the towers that we felt were non-core in our business, and because they delivered a significant contribution to the profit. But we always said that was a once-off. And if you look at the underlying business, which we had shown already last year, we've shown growth on that part of the business as well. So if you look at the underlying business performance, Jimmy, we are seeing a strength there as well, because if you just look at the EBITDA margins that have grown by 10% year on year just on the continuing business, that is great strength. And we did say last year some of the non-core business that we were dealing with was exit of non-core properties that contributed to a very strong cash position. And that assisted us to drive down the debt levels, which were fairly high. And as I talk to you today, our net debt to EBITDA has come down to the levels of 0.5 times. You look at that number, about 3 years ago, it was just above 1.5 times. And it's been part of our journey to strengthen our balance sheet, and that can assist the flexibility for us to look for other growth opportunities. And therefore, it is, again, part of us driving a particular strategy. And maybe another element to highlight is our focus on cost optimization, because as much as we want to grow revenue, we want to ensure that the business is being driven at a good level of cost. And lastly, we've seen the strategy paying off in that last year, the board reinstated the dividend policy where we had agreed to pay our shareholders at a level of 30 to 40%. We paid out a 30% ordinary dividend on the basis of free cash flow. But in this financial year, with the strength and the sustainability of performance, the board has looked again at the dividend policy and has actually revised it up from the 30 to 40% we had last year to a 40 to 60% range. And we've paid out a dividend to our shareholder of 45% of our free cash flow. And our free cash flow has remained fairly strong and delivering 3 billion in this financial year compared to 2.8 billion last year. So good performance all around, Jimmy.
Nonkululeko, that discipline is clearly paying off from a balance sheet perspective, and you touched on the fact that the business is looking at opportunities where they may present themselves. I want to get a sense of what those opportunities look like for Telkom. I mean, the business does have obviously the Telkom consumer business, the OpenServe business. Those businesses went through some impairments a couple of years ago. The sale of SwiftNet now means that the balance sheet has opened up a little bit. How does the business, from a strategic point of view, start to look at what fits into the current Telkom as we know it?
So in the immediate, Jimmy, for us, the strategy is to further harvest this data-led growth. And we've actually focused on the regional strength by ensuring that we strengthened our presence across the footprint of the country. And that is to drive further growth in our prepaid business. If you look at the Telkom business, we've seen good performance leading the market in 14 consecutive quarters in the prepaid storyline, where we've been leading the market over this extended period. We look at our OpenServe, which is basically carrying the footprint of fiber across the country. And even in that space where we had legacy copper and all that, we've seen a turnaround there where we've seen for the first time a positive improvement or growth in revenue. And again, it is how we further extend that growth. The third element, which is part of our core strategy, is basically the work we need to do in the BCX business, which is largely the IT leg in the context of the economic conditions and the struggles that our enterprise business is facing. It is how we continue to utilize the strength of BCX to turn around that part of the business, to ensure that the guidance we've given to the market specifically around the revenue growth, which is at mid-single digit, gets realized over the medium term.
Nonkululeko, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the CapEx plan, still staying within the 12 to 15% range as outlined in the SENS announcement today. But obviously with the business being spread out as it is, with the need for cybersecurity growing, the BCX business might want a larger chunk of those funds. At the same time, the Telkom consumer business seeing increase in mobile data subscribers to almost 20 million subscribers there, they might make a very good case for why they would need CapEx. How is the business looking at CapEx expenditure going into the new financial year, understanding that all of the business units are performing relatively well?
So our capital expenditure for the current year actually grew by about 10.4%, and the focus again was in the areas of business that are driving this data-led growth. And if you look at the CapEx expenditure, largely focused on our mobile business as well as fiber. We're also looking at modernizing our system so that we can actually ensure that the customer experience continues to improve. And you will see that there's a growth from 7% in the piece of the cake that is CapEx in order to focus on the modernization that has grown from that 7% to 15%. But in terms of the range, we're still very comfortable that the 12 to 15% range will assist us in moving forward with the business, and we continue to want to invest for the benefit over the next 12 to 18 months in advance so that we can support the growth that we are driving through this data-led strategy. So the CapEx expenditure, a very critical part, but at comfortable level with the 6.4 billion that we spent in the current year.
A business that has been in the process of turning around and continues to reap the benefits of that turnaround strategy, a disciplined approach and an approach to looking at expansion where necessary. The team at Telkom clearly very focused on continuing to improve that balance sheet and continuing to reward shareholders in the process. Thanks so much to Chief Financial Officer Nonkululeko Dlamini for joining us to take a look at the performance of Telkom throughout the year and where the business sits at the moment.
Did you know that South Africa has one of the highest crypto adoption rates in the world? Fact. With that comes massive innovation and new opportunities. Stablecoins are the new buzzword in the industry. These are crypto versions of the Rand, the Euro, and the US dollar. But what's coming is even more exciting. Being able to borrow against your crypto and buying tokenized real-world assets such as stocks, wine, football teams, and real estate. Join me, Kieran Ryan, on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast each week to stay on top of what's happening in the fascinating world of crypto.
The Property Pod, hosted by me, Suren Naidu, is South Africa's premier property investor podcast. On this weekly MoneyWeb show, we gain insider insights from leading executives, analysts, developers, and entrepreneurs in the country's dynamic real estate sector. The podcast features diverse guests and offers in-depth coverage on the South African property scene, also featuring as a video on MoneyWeb TV on YouTube. Listen to the Property Pod weekly on moneyweb.co.za, podcast platforms like Iono, Spotify, and Apple Podcast for the latest industry insights and developments.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The segment is brought to you by Omnia, your agriculture partner for more than 70 years. Now, the world of agriculture has gone through some significant challenges over the last couple of weeks and months, to the extent that the Minister of Agriculture has proposed something quite interesting around insuring farmers and better protecting farmers. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail because the team at the Land Bank shares the Minister's views, and I'm joined on the line by the Executive Manager for Operations at the Land Bank, Andries Mahladze, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Andries, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Take us through the risks that farmers are now facing from a climate perspective that necessitates the need for looking at insurance protection in a bit more detail.
Thanks, Jimmy, for having us tonight. Good evening. If I may track a bit a month, 3 months back, at the start of the summer season, around October, November, the season started very well. But you'll recall, Jimmy, around end of November, December, right up until now in May, the country has received widespread rain in most parts of the summer growing regions and agricultural regions. You'll particularly remember Christmas and New Year were actually very wet days of celebration. The continuous rain and widespread rain was accompanied with hail and, of course, effectively affected farmers in terms of crops being destroyed, wind destroying farmers' crops, and so forth. Fast forward to the first week of May, we have seen excessive winds and storms in the Western Cape, which affected areas like Rabaul, Sirius, right up to Langkloof and the Eastern Cape. This rainfall and storms resulted in flooding, which destroyed infrastructure, roads, telephone lines, and so forth. And on the agricultural side, a lot of the agricultural fields, orchards, vineyards were destroyed in the Western Cape. I'm sure you may have seen windstorms of over 100 kilometers per hour affecting most of the areas, resulting in communities being displaced, as I've said, infrastructure, and a lot of orchards washed away. A typical vineyard, Jimmy, when it's washed away, the reestablishment costs of that vineyard per hectare ranges anything from 500,000 to 1.2 million rand, which is huge cost for the farmer. So effectively, farmers' production was heavily affected by the various weather events that we experienced throughout the season, right from the beginning of summer up to now. The past summer was predicted to be a La Nina season. That's why we experienced above average rainfall in most parts of the country. Of course, if you look at the Crop Estimate Committee, you'll see the expected grain yields are high at 17 million tons expected for the summer, which one would assume we had a very good season. Of course, from a yield-wise good season, but the operating environment that farmers faced from a weather perspective was exceedingly tough, Jimmy.
Andries, let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at the impact that that has on farmers and on how it is we need to start thinking about protecting our farmers. From a climate perspective, our farmers have no control over the weather conditions they're going to get in any given harvest period or farming period. But there are things that can be done, at least from an insurance perspective, from a safeguard perspective, to safeguard against these unforeseen things. How do we start to think about the security of our farmers and the safety of what it is that they do, because effectively that results in long-term food security for the country as well?
True, Jimmy. Agriculture is essentially an open-air industry, as you say, and farmers face vagaries of weather and various elements. So it is important that farmers in their farming operations should integrate insurance as part of their risk overall risk management strategy. Well, with that, I mean, in their operations, they need to consider buying insurance for any potential damage or loss that they could encounter in the field. And of course, we know that insurance in this country, for example, not all farmers have access to insurance because of cost. And if we look at issues of financial inclusion, the majority of smallholder farmers do not have access because of cost, because of awareness. And therefore, it's our responsibility to make sure that we implement educational campaigns to farmers, particularly the smallholder farmers, and create mechanisms that insurance become affordable, not only for smallholder farmers, but also for commercial farmers. If you look around the world, Jimmy, in countries like the US, China, and India, insurance penetration, agricultural insurance penetration is high, purely because farmers get support through public-private partnerships and subsidies from government. And if you come back to the continent, a country like Zambia, you've got farmers participating in agri-scheme called Farmers Input Support Program, where the scheme through a public-private partnership provides protection to over 1.2 million farmers. And you also look at a country like Uganda. They've got schemes backed by government which supports farmers and also makes insurance affordable to farmers. And of course, here at home, we've already started discussions with the Minister of Agriculture on how best we can provide that support and cushion farmers against the huge cost of insurance so that they can be able to buy. All farmers across the board, commercial farmers as well as smallholder farmers. Because, as I said, the exposure to weather is so high, and the only way that the farmers can do is to buy insurance, but also to implement smart agriculture, smart strategies. With that, I mean implementing technologies that will make sure that as the weather is changing, as the climate is changing, they adapt their operations to the changing weather events that are happening in the country. So it requires a whole lot of actors, ourselves as the Land Bank Insurance, government and other participants, including farmers, to make sure that we work together and create solutions that will benefit all the farmers.
And it goes beyond just the insurance of the farmers and goes into ensuring food security in South Africa is protected. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Andries Mahlatse of the Land Bank joining us to take a look at the potential of insurance being looked at to protect farmers from weather conditions. The segment was brought to you by Omnia. Your harvest, our greatest achievement.
In farming, success rarely happens by chance. But when I look ahead and surround myself with the right expertise, I feel confident in my ability to succeed.
At Omnia, we're not just a fertilizer supplier. With a holistic approach built on science, data-driven insights, and experience, we support you throughout the entire season. Your harvest is our greatest achievement.
When I partner with Omnia, I can grow with confidence.
Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
It has gone 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by with the latest round of evening news, followed by the top sport team. From my side, good night.